confidently say that I don't think there's anyone in Europe right now that is understands this space better than we do.
That's a big statement.
Yeah, we see market. We see a lot of cities in Europe and all around the world where we see applications for this.
Hello and welcome to episode 29 of the Entrepreneur Experiment podcast. I'm your host, Gary Fox. This week, we speak to Mr. Luke Mackey, founder of the Bamboo app. Bamboo allows you to pre-order anything you like from cafes and restaurants all around Dublin. So instead of standing in the queue, you can get on Bamboo, pre-order. So then when you get there, you go right past the queue and pick up your order. I think it's a really cool idea. They're making phenomenal progress despite being just 2.5 years old. And as you listen to this interview, just remember that and also bear in mind that Luke is in his early 20s. It's a phenomenal achievement for a young company and a young man. It's a very cool company. They've already achieved a funding round of €500,000 and are well on their way to international expansion. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Luke Mackey. Luke, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
So, where are we sitting today?
We're sitting in our office at the IFSC in Dublin's financial district.
And you are CEO and founder of Bamboo.
Co-founder of Bamboo, yeah. Yeah.
What is Bamboo?
So Bamboo is an app for busy people. Let's press a button on their phone and have their lunch or their coffee just sitting there waiting for them when they arrive in a restaurant or coffee shop. It also allows you to order your friends. So you can like jump on a friend's orders or a teammate's orders. So if I'm ordering in the lunch place below us, say for example, or I'm grabbing a coffee on the way into work, I can ping anyone into my office or let my team know that I'm ordering this place and I can jump on my order and I can bring it back into the office.
Oh, that's cool.
For delivery.
Very cool. So you go there yourself and collect the order?
Go there myself, collect the order. I'm basically like the person, I've already made the decision, I'm going here. I have, like, if you want, I can grab your food and bring it back to the office for you. It's like the office coffee run, but digitized.
Nice. Yeah. I can tell you've told this story many times.
Yeah.
So how did you come up with Bamboo? And how old is it?
How far do I want to go back?
All the way.
All right. So I go right back to where I started, how I really kind of started as an entrepreneur.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Right. When I was in secondary school, I didn't like secondary school really. I liked it as in the fact it was like socially it was great crack, but I just couldn't concentrate. I didn't find the subjects interesting. My entire life, I wanted to be a pilot.
Okay.
A child, I was like, okay, I always wanted to figure out a way to become a commercial pilot and fly planes. And the only really feasible way I could see doing it was through the military, was through the Irish Air Corps, because he didn't have to pay a crazy amount of money. Okay. And it seemed like he'd be really well trained, and I kind of liked the idea of that too. I wanted to do good in my leaving cert, but throughout that whole process, I was trained to become an Air Corps cadet, which was, they take two in every year. And okay. they basically get their Irish Air Corps cadetship, and I think they get thousands of applications. So I applied when I was in middle of sixth year. I got to the first stage, which was like a physical. Basically, you gotta make sure that you're able to run like a certain amount of pace, run and do kind of like basic like strength tests and things like that. And a lot of what I was thinking about throughout studying for my leaving cert was like, okay, here's the test I'm gonna have to do. Am I ready for them? Or like going out and running every night and making sure I was able to hit those markers. And ideally, I got through like the first three stages of that with the Air Corps, and then I didn't get through the last stage. Like I got into like the last 50 or something like that, which is unfortunate, but probably for the best at this stage.
Did you have a plan B then? Because it seems like your heart set
plan
on
B.
That.
Like, my heart was set on that, and there was no other plan B outside of that, I suppose, for to become an airline pilot. I don't think, no, it was like, we wouldn't have had the money to pay for to train to be the pilot that, like, you need to think it was like 60, 70 grand to actually do it, to train to be an Air Corps pilot, or to be trained to be an airline pilot, and I had no one to able to sponsor me for that. So I obviously my next path was just like the normal path to go to college and do that. And so I picked, like, when I'm a CEO, I picked business and marketing, or marketing and business. I think marketing was my first choice because it was a bit more niche. And I did my leaving cert and I ended up getting marketing, and I was like, fine, that's no problem. But it was actually the first academia I enjoyed. It was the first time I went to college, and I was like, I enjoyed going to class, because I just got it. It was really practical. I loved how it was super interactive, especially the course I was doing.
Where did you go to college?
A National College of Ireland. So I was studying at National College of Ireland, and the course I was doing was marketing practice. So it was, everything was about like live projects. You were like, you were working with real companies and presenting them projects. And I thought that was really interesting. And I just got it. I found it like a duck to water. When I was probably my first or second year, I kind of realized there was this gap in the market, just from using like social media a lot, with around, especially around hospitality. Like anyone who started, if I was trying to find a restaurant, or I was trying to find, if I was like, if I saw a cool new coffee shop open up, I didn't know, there was no Instagram page for it, there was no website for it, okay. And they weren't promoting themselves well. And even, but these are like, food is a very visual thing, and most of it, if you look at Instagram, most of it at that point, or Snapchat, it was like, all the things that were really kind of popping were like these like tasty videos or these kind of like food porn videos and all stuff. But yet the local restaurant or coffee shop wasn't really making anything out of them.
What year is this?
I think 2013.
Okay, so Instagram had just kind of been starting to get a bit of good traction.
Yeah. Well, it was like, I think at that time point for me, I think it was Snapchat. It was pretty big.
Okay.
And then, so I had a friend who was a graphic designer and also a videographer, and I'd done stuff in video and photography. I built websites myself, and we just started thinking, like, trying to see if there was a market out there. Like, might we just team up? We got some like one or two clients, like, hey, don't we just want to make a company out of this? So we started doing basically like video production, building websites, and running social content for like restaurants and cafes. I think at one point we had around 20 different people live, different clients live on the platform, and it was great because
that's a serious company for someone still in college.
Yeah, exactly. So like we had, and then all it was word of mouth. So it was all of it like, oh, we work with this person and they referred us to this person. And we had like one or two people just constantly feeding us work and like introducing us to right people, which was fantastic. And that's just like credit to what we were doing. We were probably really undercharging ourselves at the same time. So that helped. That had probably helped out in fact. But we didn't really know the price. These are all the things you did.
You learn.
So kind of through that, I was getting busier, and I was in college at the same time. I was probably in the middle of second year at that point. I had all this kind of network of these like people who were starting up these businesses that didn't have time to actually think about social or Facebook ads or anything like that for their company. All they were thinking about was operational problems, which is really understandable. And I think I was getting busier too. So I was on every morning, I'd get the same train into work or into town, into college. And I go to the same coffee shop or the same thing. And I just like time myself as I got to take 15 minutes between my house and the coffee shop. And then between the coffee shop and the train that I have to get me into college at the right time. And I don't know why, I just thought it was inefficient of me standing in a queue for 15 minutes, get a morning coffee, and then paying cash, which is the coffee shop only took cash, and snap a loyalty card. So I actually knew the barista, so I was just sort of texting him on the way up the road. I was like, hey, can you make me a flat white to be there in 2 minutes? And I think that was the very first bamboo order, basically.
So just came from solving your own problem?
Came from solving my own problem. And I didn't even think anything else of it at that point. Until probably a month later, I realized he was telling me that there was other people texting him his orders now. Texting orders on the way into the coffee shop. I was like, what is this? This could be. Is there something here? Is this a product, or is this an app, or what? Would it be? I'd never thought about building an app before in my life. I just played around the idea more. I started like mocking up what designs could look like. I wasn't confident in any way of what this could be. I didn't really do much research either. And then I started entering kind of college competitions with these like fake mock-ups of like what the app could look like, and basically just modeled it off like a normal order, or like a kind of like a delivery app or something, or what I thought this could look like. And I made it very basic. And it was just coffee to start. I didn't think anything outside of that. And I was kind of stubborn to that at the start. It should only be coffee. And then I started entering these competitions, and I was getting more involved in it. And I saw at that point, I think Starbucks in the States that were doing this. So they were, it was order ahead for coffee. And I think at that point, so that was 2014 or 2015 at that point. And I think at that point it was like 3% of their revenue was ordered ahead. I put that into context. Now I think over 30% of their orders in the States are ordered ahead.
Wow.
Yeah. So like we like that was really early to the market. And usually, as you look at the things that happen in the States, tend to come over to Europe and be more openly taken on board. So I started entering these college competitions and I was winning them and coming second and winning these like small like, prizes that I could put towards like starting this maybe what is this app or project or company. And that just built my confidence because I was always trying to convince myself it wasn't possible.
Okay.
I think I was always trying to tell myself, why would I do this? It's just setting myself up for failure. It's going to look stupid. I don't know why. I just think that was just...
Fear, I guess. Yeah. That stops us all from doing things.
Exactly, yeah. So I from kind of the entering those competitions and meeting these people, and I was in college, which is that point of your life where you meet the most people you probably ever meet. I got introduced or got told about a guy who was building something in DIT, which is like a project. It was like his end of year engineering project, and it was a platform or an app for delivery providers that would tell them where their riders should be at the right time. So they could basically use AI and say, okay, there's no point of you being on Westmoreland Street. You should be over in Dame Street because that's where you're going to make the most money.
Okay, so he would look at historical data from orders at a certain time, geographical location. Was this around the time that Deliveroo was starting to pop up? And
I think this is just when Deliveroo was starting in Ireland. Okay. Or any of these delivery providers were starting to kind of get any sort of traction.
Right.
And I went to, I just cold emailed him. And I was like, hey, I heard you're working on this project. Sounds really cool. I'd love to show you what I'm working on.
And what was your thought? Were you thinking?
I was scared. I was like, well, you didn't think I'm stupid or think this is a ridiculous idea.
So you're always looking for that person to tell you, no, it's a terrible idea.
Like, I don't know. Now I'm far thicker skin to that, obviously. Yeah. But at that stage, it was just like, this is the first kind of real. I think a product is more. It's you take the heart a lot more than obviously a service because it's your idea.
It's longer lead time, so it's going to take you probably a couple of years to get it going.
Yeah, and at that point, I didn't even think that was the thing. Cause I thought we'd raise like 20 grand and we'd be off and it'd be a profitable company, and like I couldn't have been more wrong. So I met him for a coffee. I had this mock-up on my phone of what I thought this app should look like, and I just put it down. I think the first thing I said to him was like, here's what it looks like, here's why it's such a big idea, here's why it's such a big opportunity, here's why I think it's where I'm going to go after it, and no one's doing this. And I think I don't think he spoke for the first 5 to 10 minutes. It was just me. And
he's like, can I get a coffee first?
I think he's just looking at me glare-eyed, and I know that look now, but it's like, I was just thinking, this guy thinks I'm nuts. And his question was like, why has no one built this yet? Like, how are you the only one that's done this? And we showed him like there was no one doing this at the time. It was only kind of thing I could show him was Starbucks, and the fact that I thought consumer behavior was going to change at a really rapid rate because you had like the massive uptake of the likes of Halo and Uber, which people just got and it made sense and people latched onto, and they just saw hyper growth. And the same was happening now with the delivery guys. I mean, that wasn't a really new behavior. Like, I think Halo was a new behavior, or ordering a taxi was a sort of a new behavior, but it was just made so much sense. But ordering delivery was something that's been going on for the last 20 years.
Just
different formats for the platform. So this was a completely new change of behavior, but I thought it was going to translate to what's happening inside the restaurant. I thought it's going to happen when you walk up to get your morning coffee or your lunch. People are going to get kind of start getting more and more impatient about the fact they have to spend 25, 30 minutes of lunch break just waiting for their food when they can just sit at their desk and order it. And that's going to affect those local restaurants and those local coffee shops. We researched it for like the last 3 months of college, I think. And
how did the chat go though? How did you?
I think he left it. It was like, let me think about it.
Yeah, because obviously you've only met him for the first time. You just know you from Adam. So how did that process go? Because I'm curious about how co-founders get together and how they
Absolutely, probably not the like we to be honest, like we did, it wasn't like, hey, let's go and do this together. And we spent about 3 to 5 months over our last year of college just like researching and getting to know each other and seeing and like discussing how we'd actually do it and strategize, and like we weren't going to do anything until we finished college.
Okay.
I'm going to write a piece of code till we finished college, And like, obviously throughout that period, we're getting all these options of like, oh, what if this job here? And, but we still kind of stuck to it. Like, no, we're going to finish college and we're going to, he's going to take a holiday and we're going to go. And after that, we're going to go and find a co-working space and work out of it. And that's what we did. So when he came,
it's a big commitment. It's a big choice to make for two people that didn't really know each other a few months ago.
Yeah, absolutely. But I think it was interesting. It was for both of us, it was something different. And like, if we wanted to, we could have gone off and found a job. I think the market was good at that point. And we had these, we just got our degrees. And like, but if there's ever a chance, time to take a risk, it was always then, I think. And he got that too, which I'm really happy about.
So it's rare. I think it's very rare to find two people who are exactly aligned as to what they want to do. And
Like, we were obviously very different personalities. Not very different, but somewhat different personalities. But I think one thing was that we just had that. We had that when it was a problem that needs solving. It's a need. Those think that we were both very aligned. That let's go and do it. Why not be us? So we worked out of a co-working space for about 3 or 4 months. And through that time, we entered. I think it was something Enterprise Ireland has. It's like a funding channel called CSF, Competitive Start Fund, which is like you get €50,000 in two tranches to basically employ your first employees and build a product. We built a very basic prototype and asked people to use this in this co-working space. And we tried to get users on board, and we was only built on Android at that point. And we entered the CSF, we didn't get it, we got shut down. Like, oh no, that was like a real hit. Like, okay, well, keep going. We were just working on savings at this point. We had no money. It was just...
So your partner was able to code up the...
He was coding. We were just working on whatever savings we had. I was designing the app and doing the business side of things and trying to kind of understand what the customer wants and speak to customers. And then we just reflect that back into like this really basic product that we built, and it was only available on one platform at first. And I think we had a really basic merchant app as well. And we just got the cafe in the co-working space to use it. And then we applied for CSF again, I think, like maybe a month or two later, I think. And we got it. And I was like, oh my God, okay, we've got all this money. We need to hire our first employee. And like, our first employee was obviously going to be, for us anyway, it was an iOS developer, because we didn't have anyone built iOS.
Okay.
Little did we know at the time that iOS developers would be like most in demand developers in Dublin, earning like more than what we'd have raised. And so we were like, okay, we're going to find this. We very quickly realized we're going to find this very, very hard to find. We looked at all these different avenues, like where do we build it ourselves, or where do we go to get someone else in like Ukraine.
So you've got 25 grand off the EI at this stage?
Yeah.
Okay.
At that stage, and then I think it took us like, we got it in like the November, and we didn't get the first money in the bank until like January. Like, it took ages to get in the bank. And then
that's dog years as well. When you're a startup, that's like the longest time in the world. You're counting days and weeks at that stage.
Yeah, we need to make sure like as a company, like everything was in check. Like we had to get an accountant, we had to get solicitors, and then to pay them out of it all. But anyway, it was an interesting process. And we came across a CV from someone who was working in a recruitment company that passes on, like, here's this young French dude. He's like 21. He's come over to Ireland. He's trying to find a job. We couldn't find him anything. I think he was too inexperienced, but he had iOS. But yeah, we had like an iOS skill on the CV. That it was like the last thing of his skills. And he might be worth you guys just reaching out to. I'm not going to take any fee from him or anything. I'm like, oh, thanks very much. And we just gave it a shot. And Victor was our first employee. He barely spoke a word of English. We like trialed him for 2 days, and we was like, hey, can you do iOS? And he's like, I think I can do iOS. He was mainly a web developer. Long story short, he ended up being like the most amazing like iOS developer. Like, he took a hold of it super quickly. We built most of our platform, like our merchant and Android, in like 4 months, and we had an iOS app in about a month. And from there, we just like try to get, like, it was my job then to like get as many merchants on board as possible and try to get users on the platform.
So how did you do that? How did you go out and actually get, was it a chicken and egg? Who'd you get first?
Absolutely, it's chicken and egg. So you have to have, you got to have supply before you have demand. So our supply was obviously our restaurants and our coffee shops. So I think we started on, like, we picked an area of Dublin. or maybe I was a little bit more scattered, but I started on Angel Street and I tried to like get as many restaurants on board as possible. I was like, listen, we're not going to take a cut, we're going to do it for free, we just want to see what benefits this adds to your business.
Oh, interesting. So you gave it away initially?
Gave it away for free at first, yeah. So I think we did like,
what was the thinking behind that?
We didn't have anything to offer. We didn't have any users. We didn't know what we were yet. We had like an idea of what we thought the benefits would be to the restaurants. But we didn't really have a leg to stand on. It was just like, hey, we built this thing. We want to get users on it. Do you want to come on our platform for free for the first 3 months and then we're going to charge you?
Okay, so you limited it down to 3 months. Okay. Yeah. And that was your free market research period.
That was our free market research period. And what we did from that point, I think we got like 5 to 10 on board at the start.
And were people like, receptive? Like, did they kind of get it?
Yeah, they did. And that was also the beauty of, because like, I had this marketing company and I'd known some of the people that I started up with.
Gotcha.
That was maybe one or two, but what was great is these guys are entrepreneurs as well. You're coming in there and you're just like fresh face. You don't know. You're just like selling them this dream, and like I can see you there, myself there too.
That's interesting. Okay.
And so we probably just worked out of. I think we worked out of these cafes. Like that most of the time we could, as much as we possibly could, just sitting there drinking like one coffee a day, just watching when an order came.
Waiting to see a bamboo come through.
What does this bamboo? What do they look like? What is this?
Yeah. That must have been a cool experience. Do you remember your first time?
I think so. Yeah. And we got people, we could grab people. So we asked them like, hey, like, I noticed you use bamboo. Like, oh, yes, I did.
They're like, are you following me?
Yeah. Well, how do you know that? Like, it's like, oh, we this is our app, we're trying to figure out like what would you like us to do differently, how did you find out about us, and like what can we do better if we could do these things. And that was at that point where like it comes back to there's a ton of things out there like do the things that don't scale, like we can't do that to the extent we used to do it. So we were like, we probably tried to get as much of this feedback as possible in the early days.
I think that's great advice to people as they start, though. Going to take over the world. I think do things that don't scale first.
Like even to this day, when a customer orders, we use Intergram, which is like a messenger. I mean, you have to use it for a lot of different things, but we still take some of those fundamentals of like trying to get feedback loops from customers, and we still think the product's pretty early on. And it's still going to be a lot to build out, and a lot of things will change as well. But we're always like, hey, so why did you sign up to Bamboo? What can we do better? Where would you like to see on the platform? Hey, I noticed you stopped using Bamboo. Why did you stop using Bamboo?
Interesting.
What can we do better? Would you tell your friends about this? All that kind of stuff.
So what were people saying to you initially in the first couple of months and weeks?
Even to this day, it's like the simplest thing. It's like, oh, I just find it really convenient. It's super easy to use. It saves me a ton of time. It's perfect for me on my way to work. It means I can order, instead of ordering a coffee once a week, I can order a coffee 3 times a week because it means I'm not stuck for time. It's walking, grab and go. It's like these, the obvious reason we built it. But then you make it so you turn it to your product and you take all those learnings and you switch around to like, okay, so how can we make... What can we make? How can we make it far easier for people to discover the most local places, or how can we make it easier for people to order again in the same place? How do we make it so that their favorite place is always at the top? And not just small things like this in the product, and then also to the merchant of like, hey, this is why people. This is the benefit to you guys. Like, this is returning a customer that wants to go to you once a week to a customer that goes to you 3 times a week, 4 times a week, become far more engaged.
Over a year, that's a huge increase. You know,
spend more money on the product. They you can promote to them all these different things that. They don't have data on, and it's hard to make just basic assumptions off it. So that was great. So that was that was like 2017 or something like that. We had 10 restaurants on at that point. We're now a team of 9.
Yeah. I'm gonna have to back you up there. How did you go from 3 to 9?
Sorry. So we just did the same thing over and over again. Don't know how you want me to go about the story, but through like a lot of hustle and grit, we figured out how to build a technology company.
Yeah. So go back to, okay, so 3 months, you're doing 3 month free trials with the guys, and then you move them on. How does it work? How do you get paid? It's probably the easiest way to start.
We get paid through, like, we take a commission from the restaurant. So we get paid by the performance with the kind of revenue we drive to these restaurant stores.
Okay. Makes sense.
And this is incremental revenue. This is money that we now know that they wouldn't receive off the back of a customer walking in. We have restaurants now that do more orders on Bamboo than they do walk-in orders. So their walk-in orders have stayed the same. They still have the same queue size. They're still getting the same traditional walk-in revenue, but their mobile orders just take up on top of that.
Plus Bamboo.
Yeah.
That's huge. Have that data.
Yeah. So this is the, what it's, the queue basically acts as like a deterrent to a customer, especially if I'm the customers that we know that we are. Like, that's one thing of the very early days. We realized who our customer was. We realized how to launch into these areas. We realized what the type of restaurant works or what type of cafe works or what where we found a sweet spot. And that made sales a lot easier. It made customer acquisition a lot easier.
I guess once you got the wheel turning and you got the data coming in, it was easier to then go into the next coffee shop, the next restaurant, the next
day. Yeah. And we made like a ton of mistakes as well. Like we one thing that's really important to us now is our launch or how we go into areas. We don't just take on any random area restaurant on a random area because we just don't, they're not going to perform as well. We know where a network effect happens, where when there's a certain amount of restaurants on board in an area, it makes the most sense for us to promote or market in a certain way. That'll hit like a critical mass. So we know, say for example, if you hit 10 restaurants or locations within a 500 meter radius, that they're going to get up to critical mass in a short period of time.
Is that because, say, I order my coffee, but then I also might order something else somewhere else?
People are loyal. They order from the same places, but they like options. So like our average user would order around 3 places per month.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So they might get their morning coffee somewhere. They might get their lunch somewhere. They might go and try out this other place for a grab and go at 3 o'clock. But they like the ability, they like having options, especially when it's in areas where we work, which is like CBDs, it's financial districts, it's central business districts. They don't eat the same thing every single day. They like open up the phone and go, what am I going to have today? And they probably pick between like 3 or 4 different places. And if you only have one place there, you're only adding value to those customers.
Gotcha. Okay.
And it's really hard and really expensive to get restaurants just for one place. So we know where the value, what it takes to get, how much it costs, and why the customers order from these places.
So back in the early days, then 3 months in, the three of you were kind of working away. You were obviously out hustling sales. The guys are developing the app. What was the next kind of 6 months? What did that look like?
We really quickly realized that it's supply and demand is super important, obviously. So it's great if you just onboard all these restaurants, but if they're not getting any orders, like, okay, like, what if we get orders? We brought in a customer success manager who allowed us like re-engage our merchants and make sure that they were very well set up to take orders. Because the most important thing is that when I order, like this is like, operationally, there's a lot of things that happen for a company like this. It isn't just simply here's an open, like, from a user's point of view, all I do is open up the app, I make my order, and my lunch or coffee sitting there waiting for me to arrive. But from a merchant's point of view, and from our point of view, there's a lot of factors that go into that, like making sure the menu is set up correctly, making sure they're paid correctly, making sure that they their tablet is like connected to the right Wi-Fi, it's not going to get booted off, making sure that it's in the right part of the restaurant, making sure that the staff are trained correctly, making sure that these items are online and not turned offline, making sure that when an order is making sure the order is accepted on time, making sure the prep time is correct. There's a million different things.
That sounds like a huge amount of work for a small team.
Yeah, it is.
So how did you start off with that? It comes on a tablet, is that it?
We have a tablet. We tell them the customer's name shows up, if they have a profile picture, their face shows up, how many times they've ordered shows up. So if for example I'm a coffee shop and I can basically see that John here has ordered 15 times on Bamboo, it's like, oh cool, he's ordered 15 times on Bamboo, I'm gonna give him like an extra smiley face and throw in like a croissant because he's ordered 15 times.
Okay.
It just gives them like this more kind of personal experience, which is another added benefit for the merchant. They can't really tell that, they don't have their POS, doesn't give them that kind of data. It just shows them that it's a sale. We can give them all that data back now, like that's something on top of what we offer. Sorry, what was your question there?
I've nearly forgot. No, we started off talking about the supply and demand, actually, about 2 questions ago. I actually want to circle back on that a wee bit because you hear that so much of platforms, you know, so many platforms fail because they just get one side lopsided.
Yeah, and like what we found is sales isn't hard to get. Most SaaS companies are built on good sales, but if your product doesn't hold up, which for the users is the app, and if a really bad order experience, you're not going to come back again. So operationally, that there is a lot of factors that come into. Like, we have kind of three or four people in the team that focus really heavily on like operations, like making sure the store is onboarded correctly, making sure that they're technically fitted out correctly, making sure that then we have like account management and like customer success and customer support. Like, all of these things are all built. We have with learnings over the last kind of 2.5 years. So we have really good, onboarding net. We know scientifically what it takes to onboard a store so they have the best chance of success. Like, word for word, what we say to the restaurant, what we provide them with, where the pickup area in the restaurant is, where the marketing material in the restaurant is. We know what point are we more likely to lose a customer, and what is the magic moment for a customer to get the lure again and again. Our customer support is awesome too. Like, there's not many apps that when you have a bad experience, someone's going to jump in and with under 3 minutes and fix the problem. Like, that's what we do. We make sure we have like these are the things, even at this point, things that don't scale, because I don't know how much longer we can keep this going. We are able to right now and like solve problems in real time, which is fantastic.
You're talking about something there now. As you said, it just kind of struck me. 2.5 years.
Yeah.
You, from everything you've said there in the last kind of 30 to 90 seconds, sounds like a much more developed company along the line in terms of customer support, customer success, all that sort of stuff. Where did that come from? Because that's not something you just pick out of the air.
Well, it's something we basically had to write a play. We were built off of, oh no, a customer has a problem, what we do? Okay, we got to build a customer support function in the app. And we have to understand what we do in these situations. Oh, we're going to have to hire someone for this. We're going to have to hire someone whose only job is this and has to help us build this out and be responsible for it. It's like, oh no, we need to have a customer success. That's what we need to make sure that the restaurants don't leave us if they have a problem, or we need to be able to find a way to put out fires or help them. Oh, they're doing too many orders. Well, how do we make sure that they don't find this as a problem, make it a bigger part of their business? All these different things that just...
So as the problem came up, you just addressed.
These are things that scale the business. Like, these are the things that, like, okay, it's especially when you're a startup, it's like, okay, this is now too much of a workload for one person or two people. Or developers are getting annoyed with having to jump in on customer support requests. We should probably, when are we going to hire someone whose job is this? That's just things that happen throughout that period, and you just get better and better at it. We're just like a far more organizationally sound company now, 2.5 years in. And that's what's given us, like, that's why we're now at a point where we can very, very confidently say we can go into a new area and know exactly what it's going to take to get up to this volume. We're going to a new city and know exactly what type of person we're going to hire and what that team will look like, what the first 3 months in that city look like.
That's very advanced for a young company, though. That's very, very
interesting. Well, I don't think we're young anymore. I think we're 2.5 years old. I think we wanted to be a lot more places than we currently are. We wish we were a lot further along. But these are just things that happen. Not everything goes to plan.
So back again, I'll jump back again to when there's three of you. You started making sales, you started making a commission, you started seeing the money come in. You know, how did you scale up then in terms of, you got your CSF, that was $25,000. It's not a lot of money.
Yeah, so it's straight away when we launched. That was when I made it, we don't even want to call it a launch. I'm not sure if we actually ever really launched. We just kind of put ourselves out there and started building out these little areas. We tried our very best to try and like take advantage of the fact we were young and we were starting up this kind of new local commerce product or service. And we hustled to get write-ups and things like that too. And with that comes a bit of attention. And I think our first ever investor came through the customer support function on our app.
Oh
yeah, so straight away after we raised like that kind of that €50,000, it was always our intention to get the product out to market, and when we did that, was just shared about it as much as we possibly could, and that was obviously the free marketing we had.
So you used traditional PR, was it, to try get customers? Was that your marketing strategy?
Emailing journalists and touching them and like, hey, this is this thing. You should try to say it. Here's a code. And hey, would you be doing a call about this? And we got some press about that, and that helped. And like, that's where probably our first three or four early stage angel investors came from, which helped. Because what that meant then is we could apply for something in enterprise Ireland called HPSU. Which is their high potential startups, funding, which basically meant they would match funding up to €250,000. So over a period of about a year from there, we were trying to raise from angel investors. So we raised from guys who could write 10K checks up to 50K checks, which we took us a really long time to do, and we ended up doing it. So in March of 2018, we raised €500,000.
That's a lot of money.
Yeah, it is.
Is that from a multitude of sources, or was that?
Yeah, about six or seven different angel investors, and then the Enterprise Ireland came in on top of that. And that's kind of what we've been working off of since, and obviously revenue on top of that. And from there, we've just kind of really honed our craft. Like, I can confidently say that I don't think there's anyone in Europe right now that understands this space better than we do.
That's a big statement.
Yeah. No, like, timing has come to a point now where scale is important.
Okay.
So, like, we know now that when we do launch in a new market, and that because we are now in the middle of a funding round that will hopefully allow us to do that, that we understand it very well. And like, culturally, there's all these different things that are going to matter when you go into a new market, like whether the penetration of car payments, or like the how their city is built up. But we're taking this all into account with every new market launch. One thing that doesn't really fundamentally change is if you're in a business district, like the ones like these, people still got to go get lunch and coffee. And whether that happens inside the building, or based on the type of climate they have, or whether it happens a 2-minute walk from the office, just like we have here in the IFSC, we see a lot of cities in Europe and all around the world where we see application for this, and we think we can do it very well.
How did you approach that funding journey? Because everything you've done seems to have been very intuitive. You've just seen a problem, made your money, let's go solve it. So how did you approach that funding journey?
I didn't really know what I was getting myself into. Like, I'd never raised money before. I'd never taken money from anyone before, like, other than Enterprise Ireland. And even with that, you kind of have this element of responsibility and guilt. Like, I've got to go and find a way to get a return for these guys. But at the same time, you have to, because it's what the company has to survive on. This is the type of company that is a venture-backed company. It's not the type of company that you can just, there's plenty of different companies where you can just, you can bootstrap it and you can live off the sales, but this is just isn't that type of business. And you can see that by like the likes of the Deliveroos or the consumer commerce plays that do need to raise a lot of venture, because it is such a heavy investment at the start type of business. So I knew this was, if I knew I had to go out and raise, and that was basically sales. Raising money is like sales, or selling your company, or selling yourself. That's what I just got better and better at.
How did you approach it? How did you start getting your first? I know you said it come to your customer support. I think it was your first investor.
Yes, so if you've got to make sure you're in check. So you got to make sure like you're financially ready to raise money. Your company set up in the right way. You're presenting yourself in the right way, company wise. Like, you've got to make sure you've got a vision and a plan for the future. Okay, if I put in this amount of money, like, what are we buying into here? Like, what are you just going to be planning? Are you planning to just stay in Dublin, or how do I get my return? Typically with venture or with anything like that, any kind of venture capital fund that's going to invest in you, the return that they're, say they have a fund, like a $50 million fund or €50 million fund, what they put into you they might invest in maybe 20 companies out of that fund. Each company they invest in has to hit the criteria that this market size is so large, this opportunity is so big, and the plan is so strong that if there's an exit, and it should happen, that should return that full fund. So like maybe 1 in 20 1 in 20 of those investments will actually return them that $50 million. Maybe they need like 2 or 3 of those to actually make a return on that fund.
Okay.
And that's usually how these funds work. So we really have to go after a really, really solid plan around that, starting with the entrepreneur themselves.
And how did you learn all that? Because that's extremely complex stuff. How did you learn, this is how I need to get investors, this is how much money they're going to ask for, this is how much equity they're going to give, or how should I do that?
You come up with a plan. You understand.
Google it.
Yeah. So you got to understand how much did it take me to get to this point? Are we underselling ourselves? Or we're probably not spending enough money here if we need to spend this. And just build out a plan for like 3 years and what you think it's going to take. And whether it's 500,000 euro to get you a year to this point where you think you can raise 2 million or 2 million to get to a point where you think you were against, where you have a really high defensibility, and now you can raise 10 million. You just gotta plan that out and model it out and be able to stand behind your numbers.
Now, is that tough in your own company?
No, I think it's actually a lot easier in your own company because you don't have a ton of historical data.
Okay.
Yeah, so you're very much selling this kind of dream. And that's what angel investors are investing in as well. They want to come in early because they believe in the family, they believe in the team, and if there's a small amount of traction, they can get a hunch off that. If you're a 10-year-old company, it's a lot harder to sell that.
The signs are there if you're not going to blow up now. Yeah. And how did your first kind of couple of investors, one guy came through to your customer support, how did that happen?
Came through LinkedIn, some people that we were speaking to before, they came back in touch, and then you're just like, okay, I wasn't connected, I was 22 or something at the time, and I didn't know anyone that I was able to, I couldn't go knock on, like, what they do say is they think right then people that you think have the most money to write you a check. I didn't have that.
Yeah.
And so basically just, it was kind of hustling grind and seeing if any other investors that we had was able to introduce us to other people they knew. We pitched different forums and all that kind of stuff. We really did hustle to get to that point. And there was points where I didn't think it was going to happen either. And if you didn't hit, like, I think the minimum for HBSU was 100K,
right,
which is a lot of money. But if you don't hit 100, they don't match you. So you're kind of just left as like, oh, we only got 90K out of the 100, so what do we do? We got there in the end, and we were able to, we had big people that believed in us, and thank God. And we ended up doing it, and we're not where we want to be, but we've definitely exceeded a lot of people's expectations of what we could do, and we've built a really strong product here, and people in Dublin do love us. So we do have a really good core base of users that we use over again and again and again.
Was there a moment where you were like, oh, I actually think this is going to work?
All the time.
From you're a very confident dude, just from chatting to you here, but like, was there a singular moment where you're like, yeah, I think this is really going to take off?
I don't think I'm still at that point.
Okay.
like still, like, every month there's that moment where it's like, is this going, like, we've had so many times where things could have not worked out, and still to this day where things may not work out, and that's just the case of these types of companies. But it just build this, like, mental toughness around that. Absolutely. Like, one thing about kind of your first time entrepreneur, or being a first time entrepreneur in this kind of space, is you're going to get kicked in the teeth a ton, and that just makes you stronger. These, like, challenges make you far stronger. And nothing, like, any sort of no's don't matter anymore. Rejection doesn't matter anymore. It's just water for duck's back.
Like, that's interesting for any potential entrepreneurs or want to be entrepreneurs that are listening. Is that just practice? Is that just getting told no 50 times and yes once?
Yeah. Like, it's part of it. It's clearly part of it. You're not going to, it's like sales, like, except it's far worse. Yeah.
So
there's so many different problems that pop up as well, like whether it's people or money or investors that just add more to it, of course. And
there's probably been a lot, but what's been the biggest challenge so far in your 2.5 years?
There's no one big one. There's been a million different things, whether it's been fundraising rounds that haven't come through, unfortunately, and then you've got to go back to the table and figure things out. Whether that's the case of, like, letting people go, restructuring a team, those things happen. Or whether it's like acquiring customers and not growing at the rate you want to acquire, and just not having the money. Like, we have to be very, very creative about how we acquire customers.
How do you acquire customers?
Two kind of core ones. Word of mouth. We know you've got product when your customers tell you about each other, tell each other about them, so that we get a good chunk of customers through that. And inside the store. So, like, people walking into the store and seeing other people pick up orders is a very good tool for acquisition, because I'm standing in a queue 15 minutes and I see, while I'm standing there, three people are picking up their bags and grabbing. Like, what is that and how do I get on it? And then it's like, we obviously have, like, merchandise in the store. We don't do any, like, paid advertising.
Interesting.
Yeah.
None. Why is that?
Too expensive and we can't afford it. One reason. And the return on investment isn't strong, especially because everything we do is so local focused. So everything is happening in in an area of less than 500 meters, usually it's less than a kilometer. It's hard to get paid advertising or Facebook ads or Google ads to really give us a strong return on investment on that. We end up spending more on a download through paid than we would if it was a referral campaign, or a may not be at that pace. So when you do have money, it means you can spend more on these things, but you seem more careful. But if we can confidently say it would be a very controllable cost of customer acquisition right now compared to then if we were to have money. Like, the great thing about being lean is being creative and finding ways that you can be more agile and okay, we need to grow 5% this month or 5% this week. How are we going to do it? And you figure out a way, whether it's like going and partnering with a corporate, or it's a, I don't know, whatever we do, like whether it's like, or a campaign with our users to like share with friends, or whether it's like even things like flyering, which sounds like so basic, it's super effective because our users are
hyper-local.
Like these things work, and that stuff's not costly.
I love hearing like counterintuitive arguments like that, because everyone is so fixated with, you know, Facebook ads, Instagram ads, influencers, this, that, and the other. And so many entrepreneurs have actually come back and said, no, we don't do that. We flyer, or we literally do it one-to-one, hand-to-hand combat, just getting one person to do it, the next person, the next person. I think that comes from proper lean entrepreneurs who are spending their money like it's their own as well. They know exactly where every single euro is going. I think it makes you much more investable as well.
Yeah, and that's definitely the case now. Yeah, we've been able to show that, like, even through tough times, we've been like tenacious enough and ruthless and to not fall over and still grow. And when you have like no money and what to spend on marketing, we're still able to find ways to get users on our platform and sign up merchants and have merchants believe in us and engage with the customers about us.
So where are you now in terms of how many merchants do you have, and where are you located?
We have over 200 merchants, mainly in Dublin, but the core of them actually in Dublin. We have merchants in Dublin, Cork, and Galway. We just launched in Galway. Okay. And that was like a market, that was like a test for us as well. We want to be able to see if we could launch in Galway without having like a real presence on the ground there. And so far it's working pretty well. We've got over, I think, around 15 restaurants in Galway. We probably want to have another 30 by the end of next month, I think. We're constantly adding new areas in Dublin too. So we're going to like different types of pockets in the city to allow us to, again, test these different types of market launches. Because when we go into a new city, we don't need to take over a city. We don't need to go and own the entirety of like, say, Vienna or Manchester. We pick an area that makes complete sense for us because it has a really high workday population, a really good density of restaurants and cafes, has companies that don't have a massive number of, like, they aren't like a 1,000-person company with a canteen. There's a load of like 200-person companies or 100-person companies where the staff are leaving the office and they're going out to these restaurants, and these restaurants have really good busy lunchtime and coffee trade.
So you've dialed in very specifically to who your customer is then?
Yeah, of course. So we pick those, we go area, like us going into another area of Dublin is basically we can test something very new. Because like if I'm in Grand Canal Dock, I'm probably not going to go to the IFSC and order lunch, and may not make sense to your listeners, but these are areas that are like maybe a 5-minute walk away from each other.
I'd already walked from one to the other before I came to meet you. Yeah,
exactly. Like it's
a psychological thing, I think, as well.
It's just also just time. I'm going to go to the place that's closest to me, and that I go to every day, and I can trust, and I know it's going to get cast that thing on that menu that I want, and I can do it really easily now.
So what's the plan for the next kind of 6 months, 12 months, 2 years? What's the roadmap looking like for you?
We're working on a few things at the moment that are really exciting. That if we can pull off, it means that we're finally kind of be in that growth mode we really wanted to be. It would mean we can go into a new city like every quarter, even for the next kind of 18 months, and then go again in a short period of time, and then do new city launches even hand in hand in the same month. Become a far more international company, and just be kind of where we wanted to be. That's not like we're again, I think you were saying like, oh, 2.5 years is a lot. We're just trying to be as ambitious as we possibly can, because this space is moving very quickly, and we want to be the ones at the forefront of it.
what do you think of, like, the space seems to be very not busy at the minute, but there's different types, you know, Deliveroo, Just Eat, Uber Eats, all these kind of companies are kind of competing for people's attention and time. Mm. How do you guys think you fit into that?
Those companies do what they do very well. Mm. We do what we do very well. Mm. The way we definitely know, we definitely know where our defensibility is. We definitely know the space we want. We have no interest into delivery. Mm. Not, we wouldn't do it very well, and it's super expensive. Mm. We need massive amounts of money to get into it as well. If we were to offer, say, if we wanted to say, okay, we're gonna put couriers on our app and we're gonna start delivering pizzas and like that, we'd be out of business tomorrow because we wouldn't get it. But what we do get is this, and we get the unit economics really well. We get how to launch it very well. We understand what our customers want. We understand how restaurants need to be set up for it. These guys don't. This is the thing. We've got a ton of defensibility around the fact that our users are high frequency. Like, our users will use us probably 2-3 times per week. They are ordering in certain places, so they're ordering in high frequency places like coffee shops and lunchtime places that just can't do delivery because the average order size is so small.
Yeah.
So this is where we do have a lot of defensibility in that respect. And our users are social. They're ordering together. They're ordering in their offices. This is something that when it's lunchtime, they go straight to the Bamboo app and hopefully someone's ordering with them, or they're going to go down and pick up with each
other. That's a neat little trick. I didn't know that actually featured on it yet. That's a really good idea. So you're obviously a busy guy, but how do you combine, you know, social life, personal life, you know, how do you keep it all in check?
It's something I'm not good at. I'm trying to get better at, and just, I don't think it's, I think I'm constantly, there's a massive sacrifice you're making. I'll probably be in the office tonight around 8 o'clock, and I'll go home and I'll try to just crash and go to bed. Mm. And then I'm up again straight the first thing tomorrow morning, and either go straight to the office or I'll try to go to the gym and head in. But that is one thing that you don't realize how hard it is personally, the toll it takes, because you do have to drop everything. You do, like, you definitely have to make sacrifices when it comes to friends or girlfriends or anything like that. And they understand it at this stage, definitely. Yeah.
Is there anything you do to try to keep yourself balanced, kind of keep yourself focused and, you know, keeping a kind of a healthy mind, healthy body? Is there anything kind of you do?
One thing I completely dropped over like the last year was wasn't exercising. Mm. And it's taking a toll. You burn out every 3 months. Mm. And it's burnout sucks. And you're just like constantly sick. Like, there's periods where you just feel constantly sick and you're like, oh, what am I doing to myself? I need to get healthier. I need to go for a run. And just like, and then when you try to do these things and you don't have, and you're not prepared and you haven't done it for a long period of time, you just hits you terribly. Like, I think every Christmas for the last 2 years, I've been sick for 2 weeks.
Because you stop. Your body and your mind stops. And finally it's like, oh, now I can let out all that badness.
Yeah, and it hits you. So one thing I've been trying to get better at is exercise. So trying to go to the gym, whether that's at 6 a.m. in the morning or at night. It's something that's definitely allowed me to become a kind of healthier.
It's so important. Like, yeah, because it's a vicious cycle. Exactly. I've been there as well. You don't look after yourself. Then you have no energy. Then you have no energy to go to the gym. You're not going to the gym. You're not eating right. You're not going to the gym. It's a vicious
cycle. It helps so much. So you feel so much better. You got a far clearer mind. Mm. I've even noticed in the last like 2 weeks, I have not been to the gym properly. I feel like crap. Mm. I was traveling last week and I didn't get to go either. And I went this morning and I'm like, you just, even though you don't have the energy, like, it's the hardest thing you'll do at the start of the day.
It's the best. Yeah. I always go early in the morning. It's the absolute best.
Yeah.
So how do you plan? Obviously you're a busy guy traveling around the company. How do you plan out, say, your weeks and your kind of quarters? Like, what does that look like for you personally?
Personally, I usually do work on the weekends, but it's the weekend is the time where I don't have to set an alarm.
Okay.
So I'll probably spend Saturday kind of getting through any work that was left over by the end of the week before, and then Sunday night I'll jump back in a laptop and just plan my week. Mm-hmm. And then on like the first thing Monday morning, our team do like a BizOps weekly where we talk about our KPIs for the week, and we talk about how we're going to hit those KPIs and how to solve those problems in real time. Mm-hmm. And then throughout that week, we'll all try and jump in together and help each other out, and then at the end of the week we probably hit them all and everyone's like, yeah, great. But that's not always the case. That's like me personally, like my week, I'll always try to do meetings in the mornings, and then it's email first thing, then meetings, then kind of actual work between like lunch and like 5 or 6 o'clock, and then like after that it's email.
Okay.
You usually don't get to email until like the out of work hours comes. Quarterly, I suppose, like one thing I'm not good at is planning quarterly. Just in the current situation, it's just currently where we are as a company. It's like it's very much in the heat of battle, I suppose. It's kind of like very much at the war. So like every day is something something new. I need to get better at. It's kind of looking at the macro and not looking at the micro. But we are there now. I think there's a lot going on that makes us farm. Once this is, we haven't been able to think long term.
Okay.
We've always had to think of like getting to the next month.
Survival, yeah.
It's absolutely survival mode, yeah. But now I think we're getting past that.
Super. And what, final question. Every week we give away a book. All people need to do is tag yourself. So what's your social handles?
My Twitter is at Luke_Mackey.
Okay, and Bamboo is at?
Bamboo is at Bamboo_IE.
Perfect. So all people have to do is tag yourself and Bamboo and myself on social. It can be whatever, yeah. Instagram, LinkedIn, whatever, just as long as they tag us. And they can win a copy of a book that you recommend. So what book has made an impact on you in the last couple of years?
It's tons of books, and I'm trying to, and Audible's awesome because it means I don't actually have to read, I can just listen to it, and you listen to them over and over again. But one book that I always come back to, I've probably like read it or listened to it probably 4 or 5 times at this stage, just because every time you listen to it,
okay,
there's something new that comes out of it. And especially like if you have different problems in the business or there's a certain situation you're trying to, what would you do, or trying to find advice on, it helps a ton. It's probably the best management book that's out there, and there's a ton of people can vouch for me on that. It's called The Hard Thing About Hard Things by, okay, Ben Horowitz.
Mm-hmm. Brilliant.
It's his story of building what was the name of the company? I forgot the name of the company. It was like the very first browsers that came in. It was competing with Internet Explorer, but it was like they talked about the pivots, letting people go, going public, all the micro problems like that are involved in running a business, raising money, and then like the market change or the economic market change. It was all during the .com boom as well, so all the problems that came with that. Now he's, Ben Horowitz is part of Andreessen Horowitz, which is
the most investment
fund, venture capitalist firms in the world. It was a lot of it with Mark Andreessen as well. A lot of the book involves Ben working with Mark. That's like one of the best business books, one of the best management books that you'll probably ever read.
Brilliant.
I highly recommend it.
That's a strong recommendation. Yeah. Brilliant. So as I said, to win a copy of that, simply tag Luke, Bamboo and myself on social media, and you'll win a chance to win it. Luke, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And that was episode 29 of the Entrepreneur Experiment podcast. I hope you enjoyed my chat with Luke. If you are in Dublin, Cork or Galway, do check out the Bamboo app. Just go to the Play Store or go to Apple and download it. It's well worth checking out. If you want to win a copy of the book that Luke mentioned, The Hard Thing About Hard Things, just simply tag Bamboo app and myself, Mr. Gary Fox, on any social channels, and you will be in a chance of winning it. I will see you next week for a landmark episode, episode 30. I'll see you then.